Radio 4. Now we continue our three-part classic serial, The American Senator, written by Anthony Trollope and dramatised by Martin Wade.
A ball had been held at Rufford Park, Lord Rufford's country seat, not too many miles from the home of Mr. John Morton. Arabella Trefoil had hoped that the occasion would assist her scheme to marry his lordship, a scheme she was pursuing despite the inconvenient fact that she was already engaged to Mr. Morton. But the unfortunate victim of a riding accident, Major Caneback by name, lay in an upstairs room and was poised between life and death. And for this reason, the ball had been a somewhat diminished, inhibited affair.
Such a stupid man. I do wish that he hadn't got himself hurt.
Yes, my dear. But I doubt if his injury stood very much in your way.
Oh, it did, I assure you.
Has it come to nothing, then, with Lord Rufford?
I didn't say that, Mama. I've had some success. I might have done even better, that's all.
Oh, what have you done, my dear?
Good gracious, Mama, what a question.
What a question indeed. But Arabella was happy to reveal that his lordship had kissed her twice and that she'd extracted from him a promise to write to her. She'd also discovered a very important piece of information.
He knows the Duke.
Intimately.
Well enough to go to Mistletoe.
By the Duke, Arabella meant the Duke of Mayfair, her uncle. Mistletoe was the name of the Duke's country home.
I also learned there's to be a big event at Mistletoe in January. Rufford could go if he liked, and I think he would like if I was going too. So I told him that I could go if I liked, that if he was going, I'd go too.
But Arabella, we should...
It won't be easy, of course.
But Arabella, the Duchess won't let me stay at Mistletoe.
True. She might let me, though.
Oh, but you...
Mama, we can't always travel in tandem. There are too many people, aside from the Duchess, who find you disagreeable and just won't have you.
That's unfair. That's very hard-hearted and very ungrateful.
Well, I am hard-hearted. I have to be. I can't think what there is to be grateful about. I suppose that to secure an invitation, I must ask Papa to speak to the Duke.
No, that won't work. Your father wouldn't lift his little finger to help you.
I have to try him, nonetheless.
And in the meantime, what are you going to do about Mr. Morton?
Mr. Morton? Nothing.
I saw him talking to you.
I'll allow him to do that.
He looked furious.
He has a right to be. He's been badly used. He's too honest and decent. That's his problem.
But what's to happen? What are the lawyers to say?
They can say whatever they like.
Would you marry Mr. Morton, though, if the money was all settled satisfactorily?
I might. But not in the next 2 months. I can keep him in limbo that long, I think. And if I stand any chance at all with Lord Rufford, 2 months should be long enough for success.
The following morning, John Morton sought out Arabella and her mother. He was returning home to Bragton Park, and he would be accompanied by Mr. Gotobed, the American gentleman of our story's title, who was, you'll recall, engaged in an investigation into English ways. The Trefoils, for their part, would not be going back to Bragton. They'd arranged to be guests at various country residences.
Miss Trefoil, Lady Augustus. I'm leaving now.
Very well.
Mr. Morton, I assume you're taking the Senator with you?
Yes.
I wonder whether Arabella and I might avail ourselves of the phaeton. We need to be at the station at Rufford later this morning.
As you wish.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Morton.
Lady Augustus, it must be said, was very clever when it came to travel arrangements, and seldom paid for much more than her railway tickets.
Well, Miss Trefoil, goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Morton.
I'll write to you this afternoon.
How kind.
Then Mr. Morton found Mr. Gotobed, and the two men left Rufford Hall, and John Morton told himself that in all probability he would never see Arabella again. Arabella and Lady Augustus, meanwhile, had already dismissed John Morton from their thoughts.
You'll try and have a few words with Lord Rufford, will you, before we go? In private, I mean.
Most certainly. It would only be natural after what happened yesterday evening.
Almost at the last moment, while Lady Augustus was outside in conversation with the driver of the phaeton and Arabella was standing in the hall, the occasion arose and was seized.
Oh, how is the Major?
He's a little better, I think.
I'm so pleased. Mm. Oh, if only he could live. You'll write me a line or two, as you said you would. About the Major, I mean.
Certainly.
And perhaps when you do write, you can tell me how dear old Jack is.
Dear old Jack will be very sad. Won't want anyone else to ride him.
So, Lord Rufford, farewell.
Farewell.
I wonder.
Yes, Miss Trefoil?
I wonder if you'll remember.
But she wasn't quite sure what it would be prudent to refer to in the way of remembering. And therefore, she briefly turned her face from him and then put a finger to her cheek to wipe away a tear, or to appear to, and smiled bravely at him and was gone.
Now that, my dear, is what I call a really nice country house. And everything's managed so well there. None of the fuss that there always is at Mistletoe. If I were creating the world afresh, I couldn't devise a better establishment than Rufford Hall. Arabella, why won't you speak to me?
You're right. It is a splendid house.
Life isn't fair, is it?
Why should Lord Rufford have been given so much when I've got nothing? I'm twice as clever as he is, and yet I must treat him like a god. He's all very well, but what would anybody think of him if he had an elder brother and no Rufford Hall?
It had been agreed by her father that Mary Masters should spend a few weeks with Lady Ushant at her Cheltenham home. This, despite vigorous opposition from Mary's stepmother, who had no time for those above her station. John Morton's cousin, Reginald, was pleased to accompany her.
I called at Bragton recently.
Ah, did you see your cousin?
No, he was away. I saw the grandmother.
Oh, dear.
She was very bitter against me. Wouldn't let me into the house. So sad and so foolish, these family quarrels.
Reginald and Mary, I should tell you, were sharing the compartment with an old lady and a parrot. The lady was asleep, and the parrot, which was in a cage on the seat beside her, directed its attention towards the two travellers opposite, as if waiting to take up its cue.
Mary, that day when I met you near Bragton and asked if you'd like to walk around the grounds...
Yes, I know. I shouldn't have gone back with Mr. Twentyman. I should have accepted your invitation.
Well, yes, of course.
Gosh!
I'm bound to agree.
Agree?
But I dare say...
Dare say?
Quiet! I dare say you didn't realize that it was important to me. Seeing Bragton, I mean, with you. Sharing old memories. But I ought to have been happy for Mr. Twentyman to come with us. He's a fine fellow.
Yes, he is.
I behave very badly. I was something of a brute, I'm afraid.
Right.
And I shall be rather brutish to that bird before too long. He's a public nuisance, and if he persists, I'll have to speak to the guard.
But the old lady soon woke up, and after another outburst from the parrot, she threw a shawl over the cage, and the bird shut its beak.
How long will you stay at your aunt's?
Just till Saturday. I don't want to be in her way. Or yours.
Oh, I assure you.
And besides, I practice a sort of hermit's life most of the time. Hardly know how to be civilized anymore.
And you're happy with this existence?
I think I am. But I sometimes wonder whether it's wise.
I'm sure it isn't. People should be together, in my view.
You mean I ought to have a wife?
I didn't mean that particularly.
My difficulty is that I've never been required to work for a living, and so I found myself all on my own. What about you, Mary? Do you have plans?
No. None. What plan should I have?
Well, I was wondering about Mr. Twentyman and whether you're engaged to marry him.
I'm not.
You're not? Good. I'm very glad to hear it.
I don't know why you should be. A minute ago you were saying that he's a fine fellow.
And so he is. But he's not worthy of you, Mary. My aunt, who loves you so much and thinks so highly of you, she'd say the same. I'm sure of it.
What a sweet, dear young woman. The sweetest, dearest creature in the world.
Good heavens, aunt. Anyone would think you want me married to her.
I want nothing of the sort. By which I mean I wouldn't dream of interfering in a matter such as that.
The sweet young woman in question had gone to bed. It was Friday night. Reginald was due to return home the following morning, and he and his aunt sat talking by the fire.
There is a fellow who's keen to marry her.
I'd be surprised if there weren't two or three.
He's a farmer. Son of old Twentyman, you know.
He can hardly be worthy of her, surely.
Well, I've made inquiries about him, and he seems to live decently enough. He doesn't drink or gamble, but he's not a gentleman or anything like one. Shouldn't suppose he's read a book in his entire life. If he married Mary, he'd degrade her.
What does Mary think?
I'm sure she thinks as I do, and I suspect that she's refused him.
Indeed? I hope you haven't encouraged her.
Encouraged her?
I hope she won't be giving up one suitor because she's been tempted by another.
No.
One who doesn't have any intention of marrying her.
No, Aunt, I haven't encouraged her at all.
The task which Arabella Trefoil had undertaken was far from easy, and she knew as much. Lord Rufford wasn't a marrying man. The odds against Arabella, therefore, were great. But Lord Rufford was fond of feminine flutter and flattery, and with Arabella's encouragement he might, she hoped, find himself so compromised that it would be easier to marry her than to try and escape.
Rufford, Sunday. My dear Miss Trefoil, Major Caneback got better, worse, better, and then he was dead. Anyway, it's very quiet here now, with lots of time to think of you. I wrote Jack yesterday, but he carries you much better. If I go to Mistletoe, he'll come too, of course.
This letter was rather more than Arabella had expected, and contained one or two little touches which she thought were distinctly promising. She devised her reply straight away, taking particular care over the question of her uncle's country home.
Please do tell me what day you'll be at Mistletoe. I have no intention of being there without you, or rather, I ought to say without the horse, since no young lady is supposed to declare that she desires a young man's presence.
She was as pleased with her own letter as she was with Lord Rufford's. But Mr. Morton, as he'd promised or threatened, had also written to her, and his letter afforded less delight. It was very long and rather serious, and therefore it need not be read to you. But the nub of it was that Mr. Morton wished to know whether Arabella still intended to become his wife. Lord Rufford's letter, of course, had done nothing to persuade Arabella that she should declare her loyalty to Mr. Morton, and she offered him no response. A second letter followed.
Dear Miss Trefoil, the matter is increasingly urgent, and I give you warning that if no word from you is forthcoming, then in deference to my honour, I must regard your silence as an indication that you wish to break off the engagement.
Arabella recognised that these stern words required an answer. Money, she reasoned, would have to be invoked.
I do not pretend to be aware as to what my father and his lawyers have requested from you, nor, indeed, have you ever told me what it is that you are refusing. But until this business is settled, you cannot expect me to throw myself into your arms.
This last phrase, of course, was intended to be metaphorical, rather than to describe a fleshly manoeuvre such as had been practised upon Lord Rufford at the conclusion of the ball. It might also be pointed out that Arabella's father knew and cared very little about the marriage settlement, and that the lawyers had long ago declared to Lady Augustus that they doubted if better terms could be obtained. On the same day that she wrote her reply to John Morton, Arabella received a second letter from Lord Rufford, which was less propitious than the first.
I'm at Surbiton's place with a string of horses, and I've had such good sport that I'm half inclined to give Mistletoe a miss, i.e. stay here through most of January and then go straight back to Rufford, where I have a great deal of shooting to do. I'd be so sorry not to see you, but it seems a sin not to stick to the hunting when it's good.
By the time this letter reached her, Arabella had managed, through a remarkable effort of will on her indolent father's part, to secure permission to stay at Mistletoe. You may imagine, therefore, that she was much distressed by Lord Rufford's words.
No! No! He can't!
can't do this. It isn't fair. After all my efforts, all my hard work. I won't give up, though.
And she sat and remembered the little chamber next to the ballroom, and those halcyon minutes when her head was on his lordship's shoulder and his arm was round her waist. They weren't halcyon, of course, because of any feeling of love. Business was always business, and now, it seemed, the success of the venture hung in the balance.
How should I reply? In anger? With affection? I must at any rate be less cautious now. One way or another, I must bring Lord Rufford to Mistletoe.
Oh, yes, Lady Ushant. Mr. Twentyman quite often comes to our house.
Does he have any reason for doing so, my dear?
He calls for Papa when they're going to the club, and my stepmother likes him.
He's a good young fellow, then?
Most certainly.
It was 3 weeks since Mary had arrived at Lady Ushant's. There had been many discussions about Dillsborough and its inhabitants, but it was only now, and as if by accident, that the topic of Lawrence Twentyman had been allowed to enter the conversation.
I suppose there is no other reason for him visiting your house.
Well, to be truthful,
I've always liked you to be that, my dear.
And at last the sluice gates opened, and Mary talked of Lawrence's love for her and his proposal, and her stepmother's fierce desire that Mary should accept it, and the fact that if she were to marry, she would cease to be a burden to her family.
But you told him no.
I told him I would wait a while. Nevertheless, the answer must be no, I think.
Is there, I wonder, anyone else?
There's no one else.
This she said without any consciousness that she might not, after all, be telling the entire truth. No mention was made of Reginald Morton.
You're quite sure, Mary, that this will be the right decision?
You'd advise me to marry Mr. Twentyman, would you?
Far from it. A girl should be governed by her feelings in the matter.
Yes.
I have to say, he does seem to be a thoroughly deserving young man.
Mary looked askance at Lady Ushant, remembering Reginald Morton's assurance that his aunt would have disapproved of such a match.
But, my dear, I would never want you to marry someone you didn't love.
Lady Ushant advocated love, and her nephew had endorsed status. Mary's mind was now quite made up.
I won't marry Mr. Twentyman. It wouldn't be right. I shall write to him and tell him so, as gently as I can.
You should know that before he wrote his second, somewhat less than gentle letter to Arabella, John Morton had been offered a ministerial posting to Patagonia. He'd hoped that Arabella's reply would help him decide whether to accept the position, but it had, of course, fallen short in this regard, and it was necessary for him to make up his mind without knowing if Arabella was to be his wife. Well, Patagonia was, admittedly, many, many miles away. It was the kind of place which one's colleagues thanked one for going to. On the other hand, the posting meant promotion, and there were sundry Patagonian problems, the solving of which would confer upon John Morton much kudos.
Afternoon, T. Green.
My dear Morton, come in.
Thank you.
How is everything? Life a little dull, was it, away from work?
Green, first name Mouncer, was one of Mr. Morton's colleagues at the Foreign Office. He was a thorough gentleman, knew a few languages, and though he was never in his office until midday, and never seemed to do any work thereafter, was considered to be an invaluable member of the service.
You've heard my news, I suppose?
Minister Plenipotentiary, Patagonia. Well done.
Of course, Patagonia isn't exactly the place one would have chosen.
Yeah, I can think of a few places which might be preferable.
But one doesn't like to refuse a step upwards.
The boundary question with Argentina.
Ah, yes.
Now that could be awkward. You'll be taking a gun, will you?
A gun?
Anyway, congratulations. And thank you.
In addition to news of the appointment, Mouncer Green, who always had time to be receptive to such things, had heard rumours of John Morton's engagement, and indeed, of his apparent disengagement. He attempted to draw Mr. Morton out.
Very good climate, I gather, in Patagonia. Young Norgot took his wife there soon after he married. There wasn't much society, but they didn't care.
John Morton offered no reply. He was too good a diplomat to be caught by Mr. Green's clumsy trap.
Well, I'll leave you to your work. Oh, and before I forget, Mr. Gotobed, the senator you were introduced to.
Yes, Mr. Gotobed, champion of fox poisoners, enemy of Lord Rufford.
Yes. If he can find the time, he'd like to attend the opening of Parliament. Perhaps if you have the time, you might be able to help him.
In the quiet of a dull house in Hampshire, Arabella applied herself to the composition of her next letter to Lord Rufford. She began in anger.
My lord, your letter has killed me. I altered my plans at immense personal trouble for the sake of meeting you at Mistletoe. It would be most unkind, I might say worse, if you put me off.
Then, with apparent effortlessness, she shifted her tone.
Please come. Please. It would be such a treat. And I make a full confession, it wasn't Jack I longed to see. There, that ought to bring you to Mistletoe. Though, of course, if Jack's there too, I promise that I'll worship him. Reply, I beg you, by return of post, and tell me you'll come.
Arabella waited in a state of acute anxiety. She'd received a report, by means of a long chain of whispers originating in London and extending through numerous country houses, that John Morton was to be the new minister in Patagonia.
Well, if Rufford refuses me, I'll be the minister's wife. I'll throw in my lot with Mr. Morton. Travel with him to the other side of the world. It's not too late. Not quite. I trust.
Should she fail with his lordship, she was resigned to her fate. All her endeavours, all the hours and the artifice she devoted to her appearance.
All the visits, all the smiles and clever conversations. All the bitter quarrels with Mama.
All this was to end in Patagonia.
So, Mr. Gotobed, you wish to attend proceedings in Parliament?
I thought it might be instructive.
Well, I don't know about that, but I can fix it for you. Of course, you might have gone straight to Lord Drummond.
No, I'd sooner have dealings with you.
That's very flattering.
Not really. When I last visited the Foreign Office, Lord Drummond had more on his plate than he knew how to get through. Whereas you, Mr. Green, you never seem to have very much at all.
Still, mens conscia recti, as they say.
Well, that's not something I've ever said. I understand English pretty well, but I don't go beyond that.
I simply meant, sir, that as I'm fully confident of my own zeal and industry in Her Majesty's service, your shafts of satire leave me quite unscathed. But tell me, Mr. Gotobed, how are you getting on with the chap down at Dillsborough?
Ah, you've heard about all that, have you?
Who hasn't? You've become a national celebrity.
If I have, Mr. Green, then I hope that such recognition is accompanied by a feeling of national disgrace. An American ought not to be required to fight against British injustices. Now, here's this poor fellow Goarly, whose crops have been damaged, and who receives as compensation only what Lord Rufford, the offending party, chooses to award. And when Goarly rebels, he's considered to be a criminal. What presumption on his part, eh? A hovel dweller, complaining against the owner of half a dozen palaces. But, to answer your question, I'm getting on rather slowly.
I thought you might be. Aren't you tired of the business?
No. I mean to see it through. The ins and outs of it aren't easy for a foreigner to understand. Perhaps British law never is, even for you British. But I'm determined to learn.
And determined to pay out while you do so.
If I must. It seems that learning and justice come at a price.
In his search for these twin goals, Mr. Gotobed travelled back to Dillsborough and obtained another meeting with Bearside, the lawyer who was representing Mr. Goarly. The senator, it must be said, had become increasingly troubled about the somewhat dubious character of Mr. Goarly.
What about the dead fox, though?
That's a separate question. That's nothing to do with the damage to Mr. Goarly's wheat.
Is there evidence to link Goarly with the poisoning?
None.
Do you not think he may have been involved?
In such a matter, Mr. Gotobed, I've no need to think.
But I'm paying you money to get at the facts.
You're paying me money to win the case.
Oh, that's not what I understand.
With regard to the money?
That's not what I understand at all.
You received my note, did you?
Yes, I received your note.
An additional £15 would be commensurate with the work involved.
£15? Very well. He's a rogue, is he not?
If you're referring to my client...
I gave my support to him because I sympathized with the plight of a poor man trampled upon by an uncaring, idle, ignorant aristocrat. But Gourley, it seems to me, is a creature more squalid and deceitful than I ever believed could be produced, even in England. Whereas Lord Rufford, in all my dealings with him, has been honest and civil. This troubles me, Mr. Bearside. This can't be right.
Lord Rufford himself, idle, ignorant, but honest and civil Lord Rufford, was less occupied with the intricacies of the Gourley case than with a letter which had reached him. Arabella's clever compound of love and anger, designed to bring him to Mistletoe.
I ought not to go. If I do, I'll be encouraging her to think that I'm only going because she's going and that I'm fond of her and all that. Where might it end? It's very dangerous. I'll go to Mistletoe.
Well, Arabella, you've got what you wanted.
No, no. What I want is a long way off yet. Oh, Mama, what a prize he'd be.
Other men have been worthy of you, my dear.
Not as worthy as Lord Rufford. He has numerous fine qualities, in addition, of course, to money and position.
Would you say he's handsome?
Yes, I would. And his appetite for pleasure is beyond dispute. I must win him, Mama. No effort will be spared, no stratagem overlooked. Of course, being at Mistletoe in the house of my grand relations, that will serve me well, will it not?
I should be there.
Yes, Mama, but that can't happen.
I should be helping you, offering advice.
Thank you, Mama. But I think I know what to do.
And if you fail, my dear, what then?
I shall go to Patagonia or drown myself en route.
Great were Arabella's preparations for Mistletoe. The wardrobe was replenished, and in anticipation of a single day's hunting, enough apparel and equipment were purchased to last an entire season. Arabella stretched her means and her credit to the very utmost, to ruinous proportions indeed, should the venture prove unsuccessful.
Mistletoe.
An enormous place, with a frontage nearly a quarter of a mile long. There is nothing in England more ugly.
Is this, Arabella, to be the scene of your triumph?
She decided to arrive 2 days before Lord Rufford in order to obtain time to establish herself in the house and, if possible, get on agreeable terms with both the Duke and the Duchess. To the Duke, she said some pleasant words, which made no significant impression on him. With the Duchess, she was requested to have a private conversation.
I simply wanted to know whether you'd like me to ask Mr. Morton here.
Mr. Morton?
Yes. News has reached me of your engagement to him.
Ah,
a fine and respectable gentleman, I gather, and with a promising future. I was talking to Lord Drummond yesterday. He spoke most highly of him.
That was very kind.
You and Mr. Morton are engaged, I take it?
Well, Aunt, I was, it's true.
Oh.
I'd hoped to tell you earlier. Lord Drummond's favourable opinion notwithstanding, I don't believe that Mr. Morton has conducted himself quite as he should. Mama says that he's been rather awkward with regard to money matters.
Oh, she does she?
Indeed, if he continues to behave badly, then I must consider the engagement off.
It won't come to that, I hope. You could do a lot worse than Mr. Morton. And if you were invited to Mistletoe, then the little difficulty might be resolved.
I don't see how.
Well, my dear, it's more than possible that your mother has failed to judge the situation right. But if Mr. Morton doesn't visit, perhaps we should have a word or two with Lord Rufford.
Lord Rufford?
His place is near to Mr. Morton's, I believe, and he must have an idea about his neighbour's property and so on. He's arriving here on Thursday. If I were to ask
No. him... No. I think not. It would only cause embarrassment. Lord Rufford is an acquaintance of mine.
Is he, in truth?
What I mean is, he and I have met in town and elsewhere, and therefore I've got to know him, as one does. It would be better, I'm sure, if Lord Rufford were not consulted.
The conversation was concluded, and Arabella retreated to her room, cursing her aunt, cursing fate.
The task promised to be hard enough as it was, but now I must win Lord Rufford while the rest of the house, or most of it, believes I may still be engaged to John Morton. I'm almost tempted to abandon the whole enterprise. But I've come this far, and when Rufford arrives, I must see what can be done.
I hope I'm not imposing upon you too much by staying here again.
No, not too much.
This business with Lord Rufford.
Sorry?
And that fellow Gorley.
Ah, yes.
It's proving to be very troublesome. Not least because of Mr. Bearside, who I'm beginning to think might be as big a scoundrel as Gorley himself.
And yet you're helping the one and paying the other for the privilege.
Yes. Funny old world. Funny old country, at least. Bearside wants another £25 on top of the 15. The case can't be carried on without it, he says. And that's not all. Bearside claims that whatever the action costs, I'll be liable.
For everything?
That's right.
You could contest liability.
I could. At further considerable expense. And I'm advised that the verdict might well go against me. So, there we have it. There's British justice for
you. I don't believe that justice has yet been dispensed.
Nor do I.
I mean, Mr. Gotobed, that you've merely been offered advice. You have, as you say, involved yourself with scoundrels. Which was unfortunate.
Most unfortunate. You know, I've even heard that Gorley's accepted money from Lord Rufford. Oh,
good heavens.
Good heavens indeed. His cause may be right, but I rather fear that he may not be worthy of my benevolence.
The following day, the Senator and Mr. Morton paid a call on Mr. Bearside.
Mr. Gotobed.
Morning.
And Mr. Morton, too.
Morning, Bearside.
I have to inform you, sir, that I intend to be quit of the whole affair.
Oh, but...
And therefore, I'm here to settle terms.
Settle terms?
Mm-hmm.
I see. And Mr. Morton's here to help you. Let me tell you, Mr. Morton, I've gone further in this case, out of my own pocket, I mean, than I ought to have done.
Me, likewise.
But the verdict will go Gorley's way, I'm certain, provided the money's there to see the business through.
Well, it won't be my money.
It must be. It shall be. You told me at our first meeting that you'd make available whatever was wanted.
But no.
You explained your reasons and spoke against iniquitous nobility and such like, and then you said you meant to go on. Do you think I'd have pursued the matter if you'd not made such a promise?
It was not a promise.
Do you think I'd have agreed to represent a man such as Gorley, who doesn't have a shilling to his name, unless there was someone to back him?
I don't believe, Mr. Bearside, that my friend here ever employed you.
He authorized me.
No!
Yes, sir. You authorized me. You said you'd see me through the rest of it. But if you dispute the fact...
I do!
We must put it to a jury.
Thursday evening at Mistletoe. Dinner had been served, and Lord Rufford had not yet made an appearance. The fish and the soup were already disposed of, and Arabella was beginning to wonder whether his lordship had succumbed to a treacherous change of mind.
He's found somewhere safer to go to. Someone prettier and more amusing, no doubt, to spend his time with.
But then...
Duke, Duchess, my deepest apologies. I've never known a train run so slowly.
The vacant chair was next to Arabella. This, at least, was a piece of good fortune.
And Miss Trefoil, I find myself next to you. This is surely more than my unpunctuality deserves. I arranged for Jack to be brought. As you requested.
Splendid. I'll be proud to renew my acquaintance.
There's the Fitzwilliam tomorrow, if you're interested.
Of course I am. Is it far?
Holcombe Cross. A bit of a distance. 20 miles by road. Has anyone else talked of going?
Not to me. But then my conversations have chiefly been with the Duchess and Lady Drummond. Mm. Surely, though, it would make no difference.
What? Heavens. We couldn't possibly go alone.
Could we not? I thought such nonsense belonged to the past.
I promise you it doesn't, Miss Trefoil. Just ask the Duchess.
The Duchess is the past. And I won't ask her, thanks all the same. I don't require permission from her.
Though she tried hard not to show it, Arabella was resentful. Lord Rufford, she knew, could have hunted elsewhere, and much nearer if he chose. But it seemed he cared more for the chance of a good ride than he did for Arabella's company. She sulked for a little while, and then remembered that such behaviour would do her no good.
So, is that the end of it, as far as Jack and me are concerned?
Well, no. Wouldn't be fair on either of you, eh? Let's think. I was intending to leave on the Sunday, but I could ask the Duke if he'd put me up for a little longer. Then on Monday we might manage the Cottesmore meet. That's only 12 miles away, I believe. Your aunt wouldn't be quite as cross about the 12 as she would be about the 20.
All this had turned out well for Arabella. Not only was she to hunt with Lord Rufford, but his lordship was to stay for 2 days longer than planned. Those 2 days might prove necessary for Arabella, since Lord Rufford worked so hard at his sporting endeavours that it was far from easy to catch him alone.
Good morning, Arabella.
Good morning, Aunt.
Have you breakfasted?
I have, thank you.
Friday. The hunting men had departed for Holcombe Cross hours before Arabella came down to breakfast, though she would willingly have woken at dawn to pour Lord Rufford's tea if she thought she could have avoided suspicion by doing so. As it happened, however, the Duchess had already formed her conclusion about Lord Rufford and Arabella.
I hope, my dear, that you don't find it too tedious today.
Tedious?
The huntsman won't be back for a very long while.
Well, I brought a French novel with me. Let that suffice.
I hadn't realised that you and Lord Rufford...
Yes, Aunt?
...were now on quite such intimate terms. After meeting each other in town and elsewhere, as one does.
I'm congenial company, Aunt. I make friends easily. It's a fault of mine. Though one does find, occasionally, that there are people with whom one just can't get on.
Since it was now clear to Arabella that she'd been detected, she reasoned that nothing more was to be gained by acting the good girl, or trying to. That evening, she sought out Lord Rufford in the drawing room.
You enjoyed your dinner, I hope?
I did. Though we were not as fortunate as yesterday with respect to the seating plan.
No. My aunt saw to that, the old dragon. She must think you're dangerous.
Dangerous? Why?
I'm not sure I should tell you. And I dare say you know already.
Do you think I'm dangerous?
I think... Well... You're like a five-barred gate.
Am I, in truth?
There's a certain jeopardy in attempting it, but no one of any worth will be put off by that.
Saturday was the day of the great shoot, and at 2 o'clock, the ladies went out to the edge of the wood to have lunch with the gentlemen.
I trust you've enjoyed yourself this morning. Contributed your share of the slaughter.
Oh, yes. And I intend to do even better after luncheon.
What of tomorrow? Is it to be hunting or shooting?
Tomorrow's Sunday.
I was aware of that, but I wasn't certain if you could survive a single day without sport.
It's hard, I admit. But there is, I fear, an unhealthy prejudice against Sabbath day fun. So I suppose I must take an unwelcome rest.
You might go for a walk.
A walk?
No one could complain about that.
The Duchess could, if the walk's to be with you. You mustn't forget about the Duchess.
Oh, but I intend to. 3:30? At the path behind the conservatory.
That same afternoon, John Morton paid a visit to Hoppet Hall, the house which had been inherited by his cousin Reginald. John and Reginald were virtual strangers, kept apart at first by the quarrel over property which John's grandmother had begun, and then by the nature of John's work.
Reginald.
John! Well, good to see you.
Likewise.
It's been a while.
Yes, it certainly has. I got your card. Very kind of you to drop by.
Well, I thought I should, since we're almost neighbours now.
Indeed. Sorry I was out. In town, most likely, arranging a few matters. And going to Patagonia.
Patagonia? That's a long way off.
I fear we Foreign Office slaves must go a long way off sometimes.
But I'd heard you were about to be married. Are you taking a wife out there?
No, I think not.
Forgive me. I wouldn't have asked. But the way local folk were talking...
Local folk are always talking, are they not?
Yes. Patagonia, eh? For how long?
5 years, I expect.
What will you do with Bragton?
Not much. Except make sure it doesn't fall down. You're not thinking of getting married, I suppose?
Me? No.
You might have moved in and started a family. Filled a few of those vacant rooms. But of course my grandmother... Oh,
she, by all accounts, would never have permitted it. Bragton Park, occupied by Reginald Morton. Heavens, the house would be disgraced forever.
The future Minister Plenipotentiary to Patagonia said farewell to Reginald and began the walk back to Bragton. He'd not been cheered by the conversation with his cousin, by the impression he'd received from him that the entire vicinity assumed he'd soon be a married man. Whatever Patagonia might bring, it was better to be there, he thought, than to remain at Bragton Park.
Mr. Morton! Mr. Morton, sir!
Mr. Twentyman.
I was coming over to see you. May we talk?
Certainly we may.
The fact is, Mr. Morton, I want to sell the farm.
What?
Yes, I'm afraid so. And since it was Morton who once owned it, I thought I'd come to you first, find out if you're interested.
I confess this is a surprise. May I ask, do you have plans?
Nothing definite. New Zealand, perhaps.
New Zealand?
Whatever I do, I won't stay in Dillsborough. I can't.
I'm sorry to hear it. Sorry if anything's happened. You seem unhappy.
I am. And always will be while I stay.
Nevertheless, you shouldn't take a step such as this unless it's absolutely necessary.
Believe me, Mr. Morton, it is. The fact is, I had hopes.
Hopes?
Of marriage.
I see.
And now she's told me plainly in a letter, so that's...
There's someone else, is there?
No. No, I expect not. I'm not good enough for her. That's what she reckons. And I suppose she's right. I don't read poetry, I can't talk books with her. All I can do is tell her how to plant a field of wheat. No, I'm not good enough. And never will be.
The distress caused by Mary's letter to Lawrence Twentyman was not confined to the recipient. Mary had felt obliged to inform her father of the letter, and it was left to the unfortunate Mr. Masters to convey news of it to his wife. Alone with Mary, the stepmother was unable to control her anger.
You've ruined yourself! You've ruined your father! You've ruined the entire family!
I hope not. I think not, and I think also that it's unfair of you to say that I have. You've no right to tell me who I should marry.
Oh, just listen to her. Rights, indeed. Didn't Larry Twentyman have rights? Didn't a decent, well-behaved young man with 500 or 600 a year have the right to ask you to marry him?
Of course he did. And I had the right to refuse.
Oh, stubborn girl. This is what comes of staying at Cheltenham, talking with an old woman with a fancy title and giving yourself foolish notions.
I have no quarrel with Mr. Twentyman, and I've always spoken well of him. But I don't wish to be his wife, and you shouldn't scold me for not loving him.
You're an idiot, an ungrateful idiot. You'll regret this to your dying day. Who's going to want a moping slut like you?
At Mistletoe on Sunday morning, Arabella did her duty and went to church. Then, after lunch...
Arabella, my dear.
Yes, Aunt?
We are getting ourselves ready.
Are we? For what?
The service.
I was at the service this morning.
You were, but the ladies are also going this afternoon for the service at 3.
At 3?
This event had not been anticipated by Arabella. It threatened her cherished plan.
And what about the men? Aren't they to be summoned as well?
No. The men don't go in the afternoon.
Do they not? They require less church, I suppose. And more billiards. Well, don't wait for me, Aunt. I won't be going.
Why ever not?
I find that one service per Sunday is quite sufficient. Can't change the habit of a lifetime.
You refused her orders?
I did.
Upon my word, Miss Trefoil. I admire your courage.
Girls need courage, my lord, if they don't wish to be sat upon. They need more courage than is required of men.
I wonder what she'd say if she knew you were here.
I don't much care. In her younger days, she must have gone for the occasional walk with some man or other. Though I expect the poor fellow found the experience very dull.
Does she know you're to hunt tomorrow?
I haven't told her, and I don't intend to.
I should warn you, there may well be a hard frost in the morning.
And if there is?
No one will go.
But that would be such a shame.
She put her hand on his arm and left it there.
I was so looking forward to riding with you. Following your lead, as I did before.
Yes, it would have been nice.
But the hunting, of course, was nothing more than an opportunity for Arabella. And if the opportunity was to be lost, there was all the more need to make use of the present hour, the present minute.
Oh, Lord Rufford, if you only knew how wretched I am.
Well, I can't help the frost.
I wasn't thinking about the frost. Do you remember that man who was at Rufford Hall?
The one who died, you mean?
No, I meant Mr. Morton.
Ah, yes.
My aunt wants me to marry him. She pesters me day and night.
Arabella leant more heavily on his arm, and Lord Rufford, who was constitutionally unable to receive such pressure without reciprocating, moved his hand around her waist. He stood, as it were, at the edge of a precipice, and he feared and hoped that he would fall.
Of course, you don't really care whether I marry him or not. I know you don't. It's all the same to you. I could marry Mr. Morton. I could die. You wouldn't mind.
Bella.
Lord Rufford fancied, erroneously, that he'd heard Arabella's mother use this diminutive. For Arabella, the loss of her first two syllables constituted a small but significant victory.
I came to Mistletoe in the hope of a scurry with you across the countryside, but you went off to Holcombe Cross and left me here, and now you tell me there's going to be a frost tomorrow.
Bella, darling.
Darling? I'm not your darling. You don't even want me to hunt with you. You're hoping for a frost.
Now, that's not fair.
Please take your hand away, sir. I know you don't love me.
Very quickly, and rather sooner than Arabella had expected or hoped, Lord Rufford did indeed take his hand away. The Duchess was hastening towards them.
Aunt, you're out of church very soon.
Lord Rufford?
Yes, Duchess?
I think it's a little dark for taking a walk. Don't you?
Aunt, please.
I am shocked.
Allow me to explain.
Shocked?
That's as may be, but you won't be quite so amazed when you learn the truth. About Lord Rufford and myself, I mean.
What? Is he engaged to you?
He's asked me, yes.
But you're engaged to Mr. Morton.
No, that's off.
When did Lord Rufford propose?
In November, while I was staying at Rufford Hall.
I see. You might have told us all this before. Has Lord Rufford spoken to your father and mother?
Mama knows.
But not from Lord Rufford himself?
Oh, yes, certainly. He hasn't spoken to Papa, of course, because Papa wouldn't be interested.
Lord Rufford should speak with the Duke at any rate.
Yes, but not yet. He's very sensitive about things. I wouldn't want him to think that he was being challenged as to his intentions. I tell you, Aunt, if he were to change his mind, it would kill me.
It seemed to Mary Masters that if her stepmother judged her to be a slut, then she could no longer live in the same house as her. She therefore written to Lady Ushant, and Lady Ushant's nephew soon brought a message to Mrs. Masters.
It concerns Mary.
I supposed it might, Mr. Morton.
Lady Ushant would like her to stay at Cheltenham.
Again? The girl has only just come back from there. Why would she like her to stay?
Well, my aunt is very fond of her.
We knew that already. Has Mary been communicating?
With my aunt, you mean?
Yes, with your aunt. Has she been complaining about me because I tried to make her see sense over Larry Twentyman? Has she? Has she been corresponding behind my back?
Mrs. Masters...
I call that sly. I call that deceitful and wicked. And if I have my way, Mr. Morton, she won't go to Cheltenham.
I don't mean to be uncivil, sir, but your aunt does Mary no good. No good at all.
In Dillsborough that evening, Reginald had a chance encounter.
I've been told, Mr. Twentyman, that you're thinking of selling up. Leaving. Can this be true?
Yes, it's true.
I'm sorry to hear it. Very sorry.
You'll have guessed my reason for going?
Yes.
I thought that I could persuade her. Eventually. But she's not like other girls. She has a will of her own.
She does.
I've been talking to her father. He believes there may be someone else.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, he's not certain who. Various fellows have been mentioned.
And Lawrence went through the list of suspects. A process which caused Reginald to feel as vexed and dismayed as when he'd first learned of Lawrence's interest in Mary. To think that she might be connected with one or more of such highly unsuitable, unworthy characters. To think that she might be ready to fall in love with every fellow she set eyes on.
She hasn't mentioned a name to you, I suppose.
But she hasn't.
Should you find out who it is, I'd be grateful if you could tell me straight away. I think I have a right to know.
It was still dark the following morning when Arabella got out of bed, opened the window, and came to the conclusion, triumphantly, that the chill in the air was hardly enough for frost. At 9 o'clock, dressed in her riding attire, she went down to the breakfast parlour.
Good morning, Aunt.
Good morning, my dear. I see you're intending to ride. I didn't know you were a sportswoman.
I enjoy a good ride if I have a good horse.
And do you?
Lord Rufford has lent me one of his.
Ah, of course. The meet is at Cottesmore, I believe. I hope there'll be no difficulty getting back.
None at all. Lord Rufford will see to that.
A hunt is not an ideal occasion for words and deeds of love. It was unlikely that Arabella would be asked to become Lady Rufford while in pursuit of a fox. But when the sport was over...
Well now, getting back.
Yes.
The best bet would be to ride to Stamford and hire a carriage from there. Agreed?
Agreed.
Tired?
Very. May I?
Please.
She leant her head against him.
Comfortable now?
Thank you.
You know, we should have got that last fox. We really should.
Lord Rufford. What does this mean?
It means that you're a jolly fine girl.
No, Lord Rufford, no.
No?
If you're a man of honour, you must tell me straight away, do you care for me? Do you love me?
But, of course.
Honestly. And sincerely, I mean. With all your heart.
Of course. And I'll tell you something else. Jack must be yours now.
Are you serious?
Never more so.
She lay against him as if she was about to faint, and wondered whether to encourage Lord Rufford towards a more definitive declaration of love. Such a result would be glorious indeed. But the process would also allow him the chance, if he wished to take it, of disclaiming any proposal. No. She'd make do. The bestowal of kisses and of the horse was a sufficient sign of intent. She would consider herself engaged.
Oh, Rufford. Oh, my dearest.
Arabella, what you did was very wrong.
Was it, Aunt? I thought it was most enjoyable.
I tell you, if I had known that you were to indulge in such behaviour, I would never have let you stay at Mistletoe. Alone, with Lord Rufford in a hired carriage.
Aunt, I'm engaged to marry him. And is a hired carriage so very much more wicked than a private one?
What does he intend to do now?
He intends to marry me. The Duke, I suppose, might speak to him now.
The following morning.
Arabella?
Yes?
Arabella, he's gone.
He's left.
Yes, Aunt, I know.
News of Lord Rufford's dawn departure from Mistletoe had already been brought to Arabella by her maid, and she therefore found time to compose herself before the inevitable intrusion of the Duchess.
He told me last night he'd received a telegram. There's some horse he's interested in buying. So typical of the man, always dashing off. I take it he didn't speak with you.
I exchanged a few words after dinner, but he said nothing about leaving early. I was trying to talk to him alone, in view, you know, of our conversation yesterday, but it proved impossible.
Ah, well. I shall write to him, of course. Busy as he is, I'm sure he'll find the opportunity to meet with the Duke before too long.
The Duchess withdrew from the room. She felt that she was now quite certain there was no engagement between her niece and Lord Rufford, or if there was, he didn't mean to keep it. As for Arabella...
I wish that I could have caught him and nailed him down while he was here.
She knew full well that Lord Rufford had run away from her.
But I haven't lost him yet. And I haven't given up hope. I'll write to him. I'll write as many times as it takes. I'll tell him that he's made a promise. And that it's a promise he must keep.
In episode 2 of The American Senator by Anthony Trollope, dramatised by Martin Wade, Trollope was played by Robert Glenister, Arabella by Anna Maxwell Martin, Lady Augustus by Barbara Flynn, John Morton, Blake Ritson, Reginald Morton, Daniel Rabin, Mary, Penelope Rawlins. Lady Ushant was played by Joanna David, Senator Gotobed by Stuart Milligan, Lord Rufford, Henry DeVasse, the Duchess of Mayfair, Elaine Claxton, Lawrence Twentyman, Carl Prekop, Mrs. Masters, Jane Whittenshaw, Mounser Green, Jonathan Forbes, and Bearside, Sean Baker. The director is Tracy Neal.
You can hear the final part of The American Senator at the same time next week. After the news, DJ Taylor talks to Barry Unsworth, who shared the 1992 Booker Prize for his historical novel Sacred Hunger. Now, Unsworth has completed a sequel, The Quality of Mercy. Hear more in Open Book in a couple of minutes.
Saving Species is a celebration of the work that people at all levels, all around the world, are doing to protect wildlife.
The presenter of Saving Species, Brett Westwood.
I think my favourite story has to be the five cuckoos which were radio-tagged by the British Trust for Ornithology back in late spring. Our listeners have been following their every wing beat since then, and now all five cuckoos have reached Africa. It's very exciting stuff.
Join Brett Westwood for Saving Species on BBC Radio 4, Tuesday mornings at 11 o'clock.